Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Today is a very special bonus edition. It's a show in between shows. Jason Anthony is my usual co-host on Thursday evenings when we record, but we did not cover all the outfielders. We didn't do that also by design because it's an opportunity for me to talk with another FTN colleague, one of probably the nicest people that you will meet in the industry if you've gone to live events. I think most people know that. But you know him as Lucas Beery, because that's his name. What's going on, Lucas?
Not too much, man. Excited to have you on. Fired up to be on the team at FTN and try to help out our subscribers. And we're in draft season. I mean, it is fully loaded. People are putting in their last minute drafts. They're going over their league allotment that they had set out for themselves, and we're just starving for regular season baseball. So I'm fired up.
You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people know that you do, but maybe some don't, is you are really big into the dynasty and keeper world. You've been playing that for a lot of years, but like, where are you in terms of your draft for that, or deciding on your keepers? What's going on there?
Yeah. So I'm in three dynasty leagues now. I finished up all the supplemental drafts, or the first year player drafts. One of them, I'm rebuilding a 20 team league that was abandoned. This dude gave up the team to me, or he gave up the team and then someone found me. He had five or six players that were in Japan on this roster that he didn't cut because he got so busy, like Shogo Akiyama, Jesus Aguilar. So, I mean, it was a total rebuild from the ground up, and I got Travis Bazana in that league, number two. So just been refilling off those drafts, but right now people are lining up their rosters, trades, and making their cuts because they're over the roster limit. So it's an exciting time for dynasty folks too.
Yeah. And so in our, the FTN Fantasy, if you are a subscriber and you're in on the Discord channels, we've got a few channels there, you know, fantasy baseball, high stakes, NFBC. And we've also got one for dynasty talk. So you've got any questions for Lucas or for Jake Kuchek, who also is a big Dynasty Keepers guy, go ahead and ask them. But Lucas has been doing some great work for us now his second year with FTN, in the middle of doing the spring training roundups, a little bit of news here and there. Every Monday comes out with that article. And then, of course, did the Draft Champions article in the FTN Draft Guide and some of the Sink Your Battleships. And then as we get ready to transition into in-season mode, Lucas will be handling our week ahead update. So that's obviously a very key piece for helping to set your lineups, making sure you're on top of injury news and all those fun things. But speaking of injury news, that's kind of where we'll kick things off in the show. We're going to run through some of the happenings over the last couple of days, starting with big news with the Atlanta Braves. Sean Murphy, the catcher, going around 200 ADP for most of the winter, got a fractured rib. Just when we thought we were all back in on Sean Murphy, Sean Murphy gets hurt, out 4 to 6 weeks, should be back in April sometime. The rookie Drake Baldwin is now on many of our radars. They've got guys like Chadwick Trump and Sandy Leone and Kurt Casale, just, you know, a bunch of kind of older vets who can't hit well. What is your take on this situation in general? I mean, specifically from a fantasy standpoint, like, where does Sean Murphy fall in your board? And does Drake Baldwin pop into the top 450 overall, which is, you know, 15 team, 30 round?
Yeah, as far as Sean Murphy with his litany of injuries over his career, for an online championship, he's off my board. I don't need to have three catchers, and his upside is not loud enough necessarily where it's optimal to go that route in a 12 team. 15 is tough, but I want to avoid it. Stashing is hard, and, you know, stashing injured players is tougher. You're giving up so much opportunity on the waiver wire in that early portion of the year where hot names will be picked up. Like last year, Rooker was added in even 15 teams, which is wild, but it just shows you how much talent we don't draft because it's impossible to predict everything. So Baldwin, on the other hand, I don't know how much they're going to just deploy him right away. As a young catcher on a contending team, they may go that defensive caretaker route, but mix Baldwin in from time to time. So I don't think it's just going to be wheels up full-time at bats for Baldwin, but what's your take on the situation?
So I think the wise move is, at this point, if you're just in standard home leagues, NFBC leagues. If you have a home league and you got an IL slot, and he and Sean Murphy falls in the 300s, I think it's wise to pick him up because he could be back quickly. And things were kind of looking up for him before all this kind of went down, or at least we thought it was looking up for him. For what I think happens in real life. So first of all, I'm excited for the opportunity for Drake Baldwin. He is somebody that he's been somebody I've been targeting in the 50 round draft and holds on NFBC. Somebody that I've had way above his ADP. Our VDP has been much higher there for him, and just kind of thinking how he's decent. He, from everything I've read and saw, like, is decent defensively, but of course he's like a rookie. And unless something like this has happened, like with Sean Murphy, it would have been otherwise hard to see when he would come into fantasy viability this year. It could be sometime in the middle of the season, but this, I think, accelerates things a bit, because I really don't see the Braves just going with Chadwick Trump and Sandy Leon. For some reason, I just don't see it. I do think Baldwin has an opportunity here to make the team and maybe let his bat and his defense do the work. As far as for like main events, we don't know yet, right? Because we're not drafting those yet. It's drafting him as my catcher two, if he's going in, say, you know, the late 300s, I don't know if I can do that. If I don't know if his playing time, I don't know if he's going to make the team. Am I going to have an automatic drop of a guy that I'm basically adding to the player pool? I don't know. It's tough.
It's very tough for sure.
With Adolis Garcia, we were all back in. I'd moved up the ranking and going to have to drop him back down because he promised us 50 bombs. He was looking good. Bat speed's up. That was the issue last year. He was hurt for a chunk of last year. He's now going on, undergoing an MRI on his oblique. We hate those obliques. It's, for me, these things are sometimes an omen. So when I see that, it's, and I already had reservations, for me, it's kind of telling me, like, you know, I'm going to be taking risk in other places. Do I really need to be drafting Adolis Garcia?
Yeah, kind of going back to the prior news item, just stashing players, it's going to limit you a lot as far as picking up other players. And usually off injury lists, the guys come back later and it's not going to have a regular spring training, which to me, over the years, as I played this game more, that's a big deal. Benintendi is going to try to come back and he's not going to have a regular spring training. If you like him as a DC depth outfielder, I would knock him down because without that traditional reps, I just think it's going to be tough for these guys to get going.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, something I believe I read in the process, Tanner Bell, Jeff Zimmerman, I forgot who wrote it, but there really is something to the reps, getting your reps in, the 50 plate appearances or at bats or whatever it is early in spring. Like, it's a real thing, and it can, if guys are behind in camp, you're going to see them behind when they return. They're going to scuffle, and it's just an issue, and you want to get off to a good start. A few other news items on the hitter side, lump them in together, talk about any of these that you want. The Cubs, these aren't really news items. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, who's a speed guy, we've got projected for a lot of stolen bases. He's got a tight hammy. Kyle Tucker off to a slow start. Does that really matter? He just got to the team. It's Kyle Tucker. Brandon Nimmo of the Mets, he had been dealing with plantar fasciitis all offseason. Now he's got a sore right knee. The Tigers have some interesting news with it's interesting for deeper leaguers. You might be looking at this and like, who cares? But Javier Baez and Zach McKinstry is looking like it might be the shortstop platoon for the Tigers. Trey Sweeney, who's actually having a really good camp, is, slated at this point to maybe start in the minors, but maybe he gets in there. So there's that. And then there's, of course, Parker Meadows of the Tigers, nerve issues in his right arm, uncertain timeline, very dicey for me.
Yeah, there was a lot of just interesting things to keep track of, but nothing that's going to change my valuations in a major way. Sweeney is less attractive as a guy that you can plug and play in a 15-team fab, but he has some decent power upside. So just more of a DC guy at this point.
Yeah. And exactly. You're doing the DC leagues. The 50-rounders, those type of things matter to you because especially Zach McKinstry is going to be a short-time platoon guy, but he's got the three positions of eligibility, and we all like that. But I do think Trey Sweeney's the guy eventually. I think kind of the cream rises to the top there eventually. Another couple of things on the hitter side, Junior Caminero, hot, hot, hot. Helium Rising, another two homers on Sunday. Where do you stand with Caminero? At what point do you say no on the helium, or are you in as far as it goes?
Well, I really missed out because I was taking a lot of pitchers in the DCs when he was going around pick 90, pick 80. So to pay in the 40s and in the 50s and even higher in some leagues, it's tricky. But I do think he has the ability to pay off the upside, but there's more proven commodities in the 30s, 40s, and 50s where he's going to go. And that's also a good range to have your pitchers if you started off with three hitters in a row. So I'll probably have to just stick with my dynasty shares I have of the guy, but he is definitely going to be flying up come Las Vegas.
Got to flex those dynasty shares. I think that's important with a guy like Caminero because, yeah, people are going to be paying top dollar. They already are.
Yeah.
I think we always have to, stay open-minded on these type of things. It's and not let the fact that he's just crushing the spring, it doesn't mean that Junior Caminero is going to be returning second round value and that he's worth, kind of in the range where he's going. I think we still need to be careful. He still hasn't played a full season in the big leagues. He's going to go through, slumps here and there. But the part that really attracts me is the fact that they're going to be playing in that minor league park. And just, I really like those Tampa hitters. That's the tough part.
That's fair. I think he's going to have to hit for a big batting average for him to really be a huge asset, because he's not necessarily going to be a steals guy unless something changes in his profile, which could happen. But I think he's going to have to hit at least 270, 280 with major power for you to regret not going after him, as far as him being like a top 30 finisher.
Sticking with the theme of, this is not a Caminero theme, but with Parker Meadows, but like injured guys always find a way to get injured. Like, injury history begets injury history. And unfortunately, another dynasty prospect, I chased a lotter of the Guardians, who I think we were both, I don't want to speak for you. I was kind of interested, high on. He's had foot issues, all kinds of injuries in the past. He's now had sports hernia surgery. He's out 8 to 12 weeks. And then on a similar note, Jordan Walker, this could be nothing. He was chasing a fly ball in the outfield and left the game, tweaked his knee discomfort in Tuesday's game. Where are you on those two?
Yeah, with the Lauder, I did go after him in a Fab League just because I figured he'd be kind of a churnable pick. In a DC, it's a little bit trickier since you are going to be stuck with these guys for 6 months. And he does have that lengthy history, but he is potentially a top 10 prospect when he's on the field, but that's so rare. And then with Walker, just his size and just he's kind of a big body, so you always wonder when those guys get the lower half issues, where we're at. So we'll have to keep an eye on that, but I did like Walker a lot for all formats heading into this season.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, these are the things that they're going to move prices on these guys quickly, right? Because now Chase DeLauder is out of the top 500 easy. This Jordan Walker thing might be all the people that have been drinking the Kool-Aid on like the new stance and just like, oh, he was just so good his rookie season. I've been drinking it. I was in on Jordan Walker. And these type of things, I always kind of take them as a little bit of omens, like kind of remembering. Placing my brain where I am in the middle of the season, remembering how much he'd struggle and things like that, and not being super optimistic. So I think I'd still be interested in Walker, but I guess it would just have to be at the right price.
Yep.
One more hitter I wanted to ask you about. We talked about it with Jason on the show last week. Was Freddie Freeman. News came out about him going to be sitting the day game after night games and receiving, I guess, treatment from now through the middle of the year on the ankle that he had surgery in the offseason, which I guess sounds pretty standard. And so in our rankings, I've been above the market on Freeman. I kind of dropped him below the market, which I thought was a fair move. It's from like the 20s into the low 40s, which I figured it kind of makes sense. It's 35, people have reservations. But then what happens is if real life happens. This weekend, a couple of home runs, and that's not something to like go off. We know Freddie Freeman can hit home runs. We saw him at the biggest one ever in the World Series. But he's really crucial to, I guess, the those early rounds in the drafts. And he can really, no one player can really make or break, but a early rounder can, I think. How do you stand on him? Are you comfortable drafting him? And what is that price for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. We were mentioning this a little bit before the show, and this is going to be a stance that owners are going to have to take heading into this season. Part of me is very worried after seeing the loss of volume as well as the age, the advanced age for Freeman. But I think at the team context on the Dodgers with the elite batting average, the fact that this guy is traditionally extremely healthy. I mean, he's a very high character man, and I think he's going to do everything possible to produce. So I would be open to him in the third round. I know a lot of people mention that Yordan Alvarez gets injured all the time, and you know he's an injury prone, but he gives you a full season even whenever he doesn't play every game. He missed 30, 40 games, but still give you a full season. I think Freeman could potentially be that guy where, yeah, he might miss a game here or there, but he's just in that lineup with that 300 average, and he could just deliver exactly what you need there if he falls a little bit.
Yeah, it's a tough spot. It's a tough spot to be in. I definitely have some second round Freddie Freeman shares. I'm not overly worried. And it also depends on the format, right? If you have the flexibility in a 50 round draft champions where you can pop him in, where you have decent first base replacements. And if you know that he's going to be out two games of a weekend in an upcoming series, you can bench him. But other than that, I think for the most part, you should stay in your lineup. He's a high per at bat producer. Starting pitchers here, we're going to talk about a couple here. Let's start with the big one. Jacob DeGrom, a report came out from Rangers beat writer Evan Grant. I don't think he's a Rangers beat writer, but he's the go-to guy, at least for me, for the Texas Rangers. None of this here is too surprising, but that Jacob DeGrom will have some kind, in quotes, innings pitch limitations this year. Not surprising. He will be building up to four innings in spring. He's going to open up the season at the back end of the rotation, which means a possible two-start week, that first full week. And the Rangers could space out starts early in the season. Nothing crazy there. I don't see anything wrong with any of it.
No, and we, like you said, we knew all this stuff. They don't come out and throw six, seven innings in the first weekend, and they do build themselves up. It's all pretty much what we expected, I suppose.
And that's another you have to decide type thing. I think when it comes to DeGrom, like the price is high, right? It's in the 30s and the 40s, and so many of us have been burned in big money drafts. I mean, I very clearly recall Mike Masato, drafting Jacob DeGrom first overall in a very expensive league in Vegas in front of us, and a lot of people were so excited. And then I think the news came out later that day that he was done. And that feeling, I mean, there's nothing worse than that feeling. And listen, that type of stuff doesn't happen really usually when you draft like guys like Corbin Burns or Zach Wheeler, right? You kind of know the ride you're possibly going on with Jacob DeGrom. So it's just a matter of if you want to go on that ride. I just hope that this maintenance, I think, is a good thing because Agreed. Really the goal, they want to keep him going for the season.
And whenever the six-man information came out about the Dodgers maybe going on that route, I felt like that would benefit Yamamoto or Sasaki where, listen, you may not get very many two-start weeks, but if you can get them for hopefully close to that 25, 26 weeks, that's all you can ask for, was my thought at least.
Exactly. Another guy here, big effect on the market, but it's Luis Gil. He's got a high-grade lat strain. He's not going to throw for 6 weeks. You've got in the mix, Will Warren has looked really good this spring. And then also Marcus Stroman, probably not too happy, the team and all, but Marcus Stroman in the mix as well. But how do you feel about Luis Gil, drafting him at all? Interested?
For me with Gil, I felt like he was going to take a big step back this season. So I have been avoiding him. And as far as a Fab League last few rounds, if you maybe want to give it a chance, there will be some potential more news. So if you want to grab him in the last few rounds, see what the news says and make your decision there, that's fine. But he probably won't end up on any of my teams with his poor control.
Yeah, the control's an issue, Yankee Stadium and all. I think, I have to do this. I'll always sort of back pat, the team here. What's an episode? But he's been considerably lower than his ADP, at least our rankings, I mean, in our top 500, in the 12 team rankings, and also in the underdog rankings. So we've been really kind of, I think, on that, not predicting injury, not what we're saying here. It's just like, you know, that's a lot of times it seems to happen. You know, how do you put it? Like the guys you kind of feel we should be fading, a lot of times things happen to them, and it can happen in the reverse, of course, but I feel like that's kind of a thing. And whereas like 6 years ago, I would probably tweet something about that. Like, you know, I've matured. There's no reason, you know, like if you're a subscriber, you know, not to have gotten Lewis Hill. We're not happy he's injured and all, of course, but just, you know, just pointing out that we try to be on the right track, and also that I've matured. All right, we got Kenta Maeda, favorite for the Tigers spot in the rotation. He's seen a bit of a velocity uptick. And then Jackson Jobe looking just fire as all heck, hitting 100 on the gun. Of course, he gave up a bomb to Henry Davis, but who doesn't in the spring? Where are you with these Tigers guys?
Yeah, with Maeda, man, I can't believe I was – excited to draft him last year and how poorly he did. It was just watching him in the early portions of the season, barely hit 90 miles an hour, and shows you how much talent he has that he can survive with the low 90s and made a career out of it. But like you said, he's more of a roadblock, I guess, to a guy like Jobe, where I could see them starting off Jobe in the minors, allow it to just get hot there and then bring him up after he built his confidence up. If he starts out opening day in the major leagues and gets rocked, I mean, that could hurt a player's confidence, even if he is a superstar athlete. So I'm not sure how this rotation will pan out, but Jobe is certainly one of those all formats guys that you have to keep your eye on.
Yeah, and obviously they have last year's best pitcher in baseball, Tarik Skubal. They re-signed, or not re-signed, he was with the Dodgers for a bit, but yeah, I guess it's a re-sign technically. Jack Flaherty is on the team. He stays healthy. That's bananas. Reese Olson, a nice up-and-comer. He's an Uncle Ted favorite, Reese Olson. Everyone, Uncle Ted loves Reese Olson. Got Casey Mize, who I guess could crack the rotation. It's either him or Jobe, I would guess, because it looks like Maeda will grab that fifth spot. And so on the outside looking in, of course, Alex Cobb, because he's dealing with the hip inflammation. He'll be out for quite a few weeks to begin the year. And then somebody like Keider Montero, Matt Manning, those guys are a little bit on the outside looking in. I'm thinking, Brant Herder was amazing last year. And he kind of did the, you know, multi-inning, like four inning starts a lot of times. He stepped in relief at times, like somebody that we like, but I'm not quite sure what his role is going to be on this team. Tyler Holton is kind of his own animal. I feel like he's in a category by himself where he can open, he can close, he can pitch a few innings in the middle. Like he's, you know, really, really good. It's not a bad staff.
It's not a bad staff, but I know less about who's going to close games for this team than I did months ago. And that's just crazy. You would have thought we would have had some sort of clarity, but we just have chaos, as skipper AJ Hinch says.
Yeah. So you know what? Sometimes we lean into the chaos. You know, my thought here very simply is just avoid it.
Yeah.
Why, you know, you've got, if you go on a roster resource, you're seeing three, you know, co-closers, Jason Foley, Bo Brisky, Tyler Holton. And then you've got guys on the team like Tommy Conley, John Brebbia, Andrew Chafin. These are all guys that have closed to some capacity, maybe not Conley, but he's capable. And so like, unless you get some sort of tip from the manager, why would you like try to, you know, grab three guys from the same team? I would love for Foley to just hold the job, and I guess it's possible, but I'm not willing to pay like the current price for it wherever he goes. If he's going around like, you know, Liam Hendricks tier or Trotman, I forgot where he's going exactly, but I don't want to do that for just like a risk. There are safer plays to make.
Completely agree, and I have totally avoided this pen. Maybe a last few rounds share of a Will Vest because he looked good in the playoffs, but your opportunity cost is so low in those last handful of rounds of a DC. So I'm with you there.
All right. We're going to run through just a couple more guys just because, you know, this is fun. I did talk to Lucas before the show. I was like, dude, listen, you know, you and I haven't done show in a while. I think you probably know I'm a rambler. So kind of, you know, keep me in check. Let's keep the spring stuff short because we got a lot of outfields to talk about, but this is also fun and exciting stuff. Dude, there is just, maybe it's just the Dodger in me, but like seeing Walker Buehler just shred with his pitches over the weekend, wearing that number zero for like this cool Red Sox team. I don't know, man. Like, I think I'm buying into those vibes. I'd like to see him stay healthy. Does that have any effect on you, or are you like kind of, you know, try to keep emotionally detached?
You know, it somewhat does. There are certain players, like we had talked about with Freeman, where you trust that this guy's going to give everything he's got, versus other players. You know, and I don't know any major leaguers personally, obviously, but someone like Yoan Moncada, I'm kind of rounding down on what we're going to get out of this guy. Buehler is a maniacal worker. I've heard him on the Just Baseball podcast. He's a very brilliant mind, and he's a very relatable guy. So I think, you know, obviously he's got the double Tommy John. That's not a good sign, but I think as far as whatever talent he's got left in his arm, I trust him to make the most of it. So I hear you there.
Yeah. It's obviously, no one's, we're not moving up rankings because, you know, Walker Buehler's wearing a zero, you know, wearing number zero and getting four strikeouts in a minor league game. I mean, we'd be moving him up because we know he has a rotation spot, because he's healthy right now, because he has a good track record. You know, all these things kind of come as part of the equation. But like, again, everything comes down to at what cost, at what price. So, you know, do we continue to buy in or not? Another few guys here. Last, we'll wrap it up here. Michael Soroka is interesting. We saw a lot of talent with him back in the day, even, you know, pre-COVID days with the Braves, a lot of upside we believed he had. And then he performed well for the White Sox last year. And now he's on the Nationals, right? Going to have a job there. Velocity is up. Three scoreless, no-hit innings on Saturday. You know, if he went back to the White Sox, he'd probably be the ace of that staff. But, you know, so he's interesting. On the flip side, Kumar Rocker is got shelled again. I mean, how do I put this? Like, so he might start off in AAA if he continues to struggle. I think at this point he just needs to have like just clean inning after clean inning, because the Rangers have a full rotation. And if there's no injury, I think Rocker will start in the minors. But you know, two different guys at two different parts of their career. Are you buying on either?
You know, for Soroka, in a fab league, he's tricky just because it's going to be hard to know when to use him unless he's going up against the Marlins, which I haven't checked their schedule, but again, he's a hard guy to put in your lineup. In a DC, as far as that late round guy, it's not a bad idea. He made some changes, went with a four seamer and a slider when he went into the bullpen last year. And obviously Washington has some sort of plan, or else they wouldn't have given him $9 million. So I don't mind that as a flyer, but like I said, he'll be tough to start unless you see it start after start. Mm-hmm. And with Rocker, he's doing some little tweaks to his pitch mix. So you could take that as good or bad. I mean, he's open to making changes, but he's not using the death ball pitch that he used last year. That was phenomenal. So I would round down on my profile for him a little bit because he's not using those pitches that were so successful, but maybe he's just pocketed them and he's experimenting. So this is where overreacting to spring training can happen right before our eyes. If you see Rocker slide down, but it's also good to be aware of the news. So you don't want to overreact, but you do need to digest it a little bit.
Yeah. The only issue I am not concerned with Kumar Rocker that he's not starting the season in the rotation. A lot of us would expect that to not be the case. And that doesn't affect me drafting him or not. That just affects how many of those types I have, right? So
yes,
with a seven player bench, if I'm drafting Kumar Rocker, and if he's a real big target of mine, and say he slips to like the 30th round, all of a sudden he's a, you know, instead of a 18th or 19th, he's a 30th rounder, and you can stash him for a little bit. You also don't want a lot of stashes. You were just mentioning that. Like, so you're not going after Bubba Chandler. You're not taking a chance on David Festa. You probably don't want to grab, you know, Jacob deGrom and Byron Buxton, or before you know it, you'll have the all IL and minor league team. So only thing I'm concerned about with Rocker, it's the health. If he stays healthy, I think he'll be fine. So I'm in on that. One last rookie, I want to get your dynasty take on this. I am a huge Quinn Matthews fan, St. Louis Cardinals pitcher, big prospect for them. I think he'll be up at some point reasonably early. I don't know, May, June. And I think he'll be really good. Might even happen before that, because Steven Matz always finds a way to get hurt. Andre Pallante's velocity is down. But Quinn Matthews is reassigned to minor league camp. Is he more of a, like, how do you compare him as a stash versus like Kumar Rocker?
That's a good question, and I'm glad that you brought those two up to compare and contrast. With Rocker, based on his results last year in AAA, I do think you could see front line upside from an ace upside. I think with Matthews, you're looking more at a good mid rotation guy. I think if Rocker can develop a good fastball as well as a good sinker to go with that elite breaking ball, I think, like I said, you could see SP2, maybe even SP1 if he can produce health. With Matthews, I think you're more so hoping for that premium Jordan Montgomery type outcome because he's not a big bat misser, but he could suppress BABIPs and produce decent ratios. But I think the strikeouts could be a little bit limited for Matthews.
I think more like a ratios play. But he's a big Cardinal, right? Stanford Cardinal guy.
Yeah, I like him this year, and stashing him would be tough because he does not, I don't think, have that big upside, but he's going to go for 200-300 bucks when he comes up. So it's just, what do you want to do with that spot?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we are going to get into some outfielders. Just a real quick note. I mean, are there any closer stuff you want to touch on? I think I know we know that like Felix Bautista isn't going to be going back to back, but he's looking good. I don't know what that's going to do to his job. Calvin Faucher looks like he's kind of gaining steam. He's having clean innings while Jesus Tinoco is not. So maybe things are going in that direction, which sucks for you and I have both. I know in one of your articles and in my rankings, we've been kind of more on the Tinoco train, and these things can flip, right? One way or the
Right.
other. But I'm still rooting for Tinoco, but at the moment, looks like manager Chase McCullough likes Falker. And then Alex Diaz, he should be fine dealing with a hamstring injury. My question, do you think he lasts the whole season, or is somebody there going to come take his job?
I don't think he'll last personally, but I've thought that for the last few years. So he's kind of one of those ones where I've gotten him wrong, but at the same time, 4.5 ERA and some good saves. Yes, that's solid, but yeah, I don't trust the skills. So yeah, not a guy I would be going after.
All right. We're going to jump into the outfielders. Jason and I covered it in the past episode with the top, the guys going in the top 150. I think it was about 30 or so guys. Just a couple of quick housekeeping notes. As you might know, the custom rankings and projections tools out. I'm not just a, what's it called? And the fan club, I'm also a client. I love it. I'm not having to go to my like back-end data to look for things. I'm just like running queries for different types of leagues. Like I'm in my Tout Wars, and then I go to it and I, have my OBP setting, and it helps me pick off my own projections who I'm going to pick next. It's an incredible tool. You can use it for roto, for points, customize it for like OBP holds. We just added solds, save plus holds. It's got the ESPN Yahoo and CBS like default point league setups there, and the dollar values, the rankings, everything. You can hit set up the hitter and pitcher split. You can even if say you think VDP is too bullish on players, go change the projection source to the FTN model run by Frank Brank, who's a genius in the game for 10 plus years, just crushing it in the DFS betting and baseball space. Actually used to play college baseball himself. Obviously, that has no influence on his data abilities. One has nothing to do with the other. But what do you think of the custom rankings tool?
I love the way that it looks. As far as the functionality of it, it's extremely strong. We were able to do a little bit of QC work on it recently, and yeah, I mean, that's the thing that you hear a lot about points leagues. Points leagues this and that. There's not that many points leagues that are the standard or the same. So this is where a custom tool like this, as we talked about over the winter, is just going to be so beneficial, I feel like, for people. And OBP leagues, I'd heard people mentioning OBP average draft position doesn't exist. So again, this is where you're going to need a custom tool to help you out in that side. So yeah, really good addition.
One thing about OBP leagues I wanted to mention is, from my experience in them, is that sometimes people forget it is one of the 10
Yes.
categories. You don't, yeah. I mean, sure, you still want to be careful. You don't want to draft a whole bunch of guys with a, 290, 300 OBP, but it's the same thing, like average, right? You kind of balance it out. You got guys on opposite ends. And so I think sometimes people will kind of overweigh that one category and
Oh yeah.
forget that it's one of the 10.
I've seen that many, many times.
Some other cool things, we added the DraftKings best ball rankings. So we have that up on the site to go along with the underdog best ball rankings. The top 500 is updated. We got the spring training reports. We got some more special stuff on the way. And then my final tiers article will come out, the relief pitcher tiers. We got another state of the steal from Dan Thompson. Mike Mager's crushing it. It's fantastic. So get in there, ftnfantasy.com. We're going to help you crush your leagues 15% off. Either the standard or the high stakes package, where I will personally help you win. The code is SPRING15. All right. Outfielders. You missed the first part of it, but this is the... So we were going to look at the players in the OC. So this is the 12-team online championship. It's a little bit more like, you know, upside builds, I believe, because you do have like 5,000 plus people in these competitions. But Lucas and I are looking at outfielders based on the last week of ADP, and just kind of off the top, guys that are going in like, you know, 150 to 175 range. I just wanted to start with those names and just let's just go down the board and see how we feel about some of these guys. Players going around like 140 to like 175. You've got Josh Lowe. You've got Spencer Steer, who's dinged up. You got Adolis Garcia dinged up. Colton Cowser, Brandon Nimmo dinged up, Taylor Ward dinged up. My goodness. Nick Castellanos, Jerkson Profar, and Lane Thomas. So just looking at that list, who stands out for you as far as like targets or fades?
Yeah, so I am a very boring drafter. As people know who read my work, I like to just go for that projectable profile where I kind of know what I'm going to get. That's typically my style. A guy like Brandon Nimmo, a guy like Taylor Ward, I love them. They're just going to be reliable. I'm not going to have too many upset stomachs or ulcers dealing with those guys. But yeah, with Adolis, he was a faller, and I felt like things were shaping up for him to have a good comeback season. That's a really good Rangers lineup, but sometimes the injury bug comes in and there's just nothing we can do about it. But I do think this is a really nice range to buy some outfields. What are your thoughts?
So one thing I didn't touch on Adolis is if he does end up missing some considerable time, I think that helps Jake Berger a little bit. Like, so we've been under the market, or at least I have been under the market on Jake Berger. What that means is my ranking for him is lower than what his ADP is. And it's not by much. It's maybe a round or so. But like a guy like Jake Berger, who would be slated to hit in the bottom third of the lineup, now would need to kind of move up in the lineup, or like a Josh Young. You know, as well, someone like that. Maybe it gets like a guy like Josh Smith some more playing opportunity, who kind of showed what he can do last year. But yeah, the Adolis thing is a little concerning. I do like I like Taylor Ward. I kind of like what the Angels are doing in general. Not worried. I think he had like a little back to side discomfort, like some issue. I think he should be fine. So I do like Taylor Ward around that price. Colton Cowser is a tough one for me. Not sure where you stand. And that's really just comes down to, I don't know like how the Orioles are going to manage all those guys. Like, so if everyone stays healthy, you know, could Cowser be forced into a platoon if he's like running cold for whatever reason? I think we know his upside is high, and apparently manager Brandon Hyde wants him to run a little bit more. So I don't know. Where are you with Cowser?
I actually really love Cowser. He's one of my higher owned outfielders. His power is really nice. Yeah, he does strike out a lot, but he's already proven the power upside. He could potentially run a little bit more. And defensively, he's very valuable because he can play center field. So he could even take a little bit off Cedric Mullins' plate, who's starting to be phased out. Players like Kobe Mayo, Keston Hierstad, those guys are first base and hide him in the corner outfield types of guys. So someone like Cowser is just going to have a lot more value, and he does play against plenty of lefties as well. So Cowser's a guy I really like.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we've got 25, or at least VDP does. I have checked the FTN model, but I've got 25 homers, 10 stolen bases, probably low on the swipes. He probably can steal a little more. The average is it's a wide range. It's anywhere from like 230 to 260 is probably a fair range. You know, Nick Castellanos, just haven't been drafting a lot of him. He's just, you know, I think just kind of a guy. I think he's better in like, you know, in underdog best ball in points leagues. I think he's solid and, you know, like usually healthy for the most part. I do really like Josh Lowe. He's, you know, was my guy from 2 years ago, just happened to hit that one last year. And then last year was off Josh Lowe just because the price soared up, right? It's like you're playing that game year to year where you're staying ahead of the market as opposed to behind and chasing. And so I think the price is reasonable. I think it could move up because of the park and because of something that Jason brought to my attention. Jason Anthony, Boom 62 last week, was like, what if he doesn't platoon? What if he gets more playing time because this Rays lineup is just bad? And he's been earning some work, some leadoff work. I still think Yandy Diaz is probably their leadoff man, but Josh Lowe is exceptional in stolen bases. He stole 25 of 26 and only 387 plate appearances last year, and 32 stolen bases the year before, and maybe has a little bit of a power bounce back. So I do like Josh Lowe. Had the injuries last year, but if he stays healthy this year, I think he's a really good deal.
Yeah, he was going a lot more expensive, as you alluded to last year. He's really not any different player. He's going to get a ballpark upgrade. Again, going back to the defensive value, he's going to be able to play a little bit more because they like his gloves. So I'm with you there. And that was a good finding by Jason to mention that extra playing time that some projection systems may be missing.
What about Jerkson Profar, who obviously we waited many years for a breakout, and it just happened before our eyes. And he was one of the most profitable players last season, basically a guy that people just, you know, picked up in fab. But, you know, for former massive top prospect, that was a decade ago, looked like it was never going to come to fruition. Then he kind of started picking the pace back up a couple years ago. And then last year with the Padres, like that whole, you know, incident with, was with Will Smith, right? I don't know why I'm blanking. Was it with Will Smith?
Yes.
Yeah. And then he just had a phenomenal season. I think he returned like second or third round value. Everyone's expecting a little regression, but he's on the Braves now. There's been talk of him potentially maybe getting some leadoff work if, you know, obviously Ronald Acuna is not coming back right away. What are your expectations for a bounce or for a follow-up to last season for Jerkson Profar?
You know, as far as the average draft position, when the drafters saw the Braves, I thought it might go a little bit higher than the 176 ADP. I think that's not a bad price. I just think that a lot of this stuff is going to come back down regression wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, last year he had a 44.2% hard hit, which is good, and a 7.2% barrel. But the prior 3 years, it was about a half that for a barrel, 3.7% and a 32.2% hard hit. I think that everything just checked out for one season for him. Now the question is did he develop the ability to have a little bit more power, or is he going to go back? I tend to think he's going to go back, but if he can maintain like 75% of that, he's going to be worth this price with that volume on the Braves.
Yeah, exactly. And getting off to a good start would be something too. If he's leading off over Michael Harris, and they have Harris batting fifth, and he just starts just continuing what he did last year, and then you're kind of getting some confidence. You're hitting around guys like Matt Olson, Austin Riley, Marcell Ozuna. Like, I mean, it's a great thing to be a part of. So it just kind of feels like a little bit of a good deal. Randy Rosarena, I didn't mention him just because he goes in the tier above. That's where he's drafted. I have him personally closer to this tier. I just kind of don't like the whole profile. I don't love the park. So I don't think I'm really big in on him. Parker Meadows has obviously dropped now with, you know, dealing with the nerve issue. I think I'm just holding off on him altogether. And then I will mention Lane Thomas, because he did have a really rough 2024 season. And, you know, his power went down tremendously. He was caught stealing at like, a third of his attempts, and then kind of stopped running altogether with Cleveland. He also was hurt part of the year. But how do you feel about Lane Thomas with the Guardians?
Yeah, you kind of said it there. As far as things fell off, his caught stealing rate went down. I mean, defensively, he's not a very good outfielder. This team doesn't have a long-term commitment to him. I think he has a lot of bust risk. I think his projections are also incorporating how much Washington ran compared to Cleveland. That being said, they traded for him, so maybe they do have a plan for him. But for me, I just can't do it at this price.
And then any strong thoughts on Randy or Rosarena?
You know, with the Rosarena, I wanted to be out on him, but I've ended up with him a few times after pick 150. I hate Seattle Mariners batters this year. Dealt with it last year with a few guys, and it is a horrible deal to deal with. That being said, I think a 220 or a 2020 season could be in the cards. It's going to probably come with a low batting average. So yeah, if he falls after pick 150, I'm open to it because it will be full-time volume for a guy that's done it a bunch of times, but he's not a guy I'm excited about.
Yeah, so though I'm out, I think that's kind of a better price for him. So if you're getting him, you're in a 15-teamer and you're getting him in like the 11th as opposed to the 9th, can work with that. And especially if we also stick to the mindset that the a player's draft capital, like where we draft them, should not dictate whether we're starting or sitting them, depending on how deep our team is. So what I'm saying by that is, if we have a deep outfield, say in our 12 team OC, Randy Rosarena's on that, and you have in a given week, say the Cardinals are going to St. Louis. And the Cardinals are in St. Louis. I'm losing my mind. It's the middle of the day. The Cardinals are going to the Rockies for like a weekend series, and Seattle is at home against like really good, Detroit Tigers pitching, right? That is just because you spent an 11th round pick on Randy Rosarena, you're not going to play him over Lars Nootbaar, who's like, say he's coming off just a hot, week, and then now he's in Colorado, like those type of things matter. And so you can still have draft Randy Rosarena, but then find your spots to use them depending on the depth of your league.
Absolutely. And as you said there, that's just because he is your 11th player. It's a lot easier to sit that guy. So yeah, well said there.
All right. Next tier, tier six. We're looking at this just from an ADP standpoint. I think if you really want the goods as far as like who we really like more or less, got to subscribe ftnfantasy.com, get in there. Spring 15 is the promo code. So in the NFBC online championship over the last week, guys going in the 180, so like 180 to 220 range, I'll name a few guys and then just pick off the ones that interest you. You got Tyler O'Neill now with the Orioles. You got Victor Robles, speedster veteran, with the Mariners. Tommy Edman on the Dodgers. You got Kerry Carpenter, the Detroit Tigers power hitter, possible platoon guy. Helio Ramos. Will we see helium on Helio? Don't know. Jorge Soler. Byron Buxton. He's going much higher here in these OCs than he is in Draft Champions, where he was going around 250. And then Cedric Mullins, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. of the Diamondbacks, and then Sidani Rafaela, shortstop outfield. So Robles, Tyler O'Neill, Edmund, Kerry Carpenter, Ramos, Soler, Buxton, Mullins, Gurriel Jr., and Rafaela. Where do you stand on any of those guys you want to talk about?
Yeah, this is an interesting range because you can pretty much cover whatever you need with a lot of the guys. That's where knowing each player's profile is good. So a guy like Victor Robles, Tommy Edmund, you're recovering your steals if you went with a pitcher-heavy build or a power-heavy build and you needed to get those bags. I think for me, I love the power of Soler and Kerry Carpenter. Carpenter is a guy where if you see two lefties on the schedule, you're going to probably want to bench him if you're in a 12-team format. And even in a 15, you might if you have a really loaded roster. But this is a pretty solid group of outfielders. But it's one where you have to be able to fill your weakness, and knowing the profiles of the guys will be imperative.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have a weakness for Tyler O'Neill. I think everybody listens knows that. If he does stay healthy for a full season, that is the biggest if of all. it's probably not likely. That's just the truth, right? So, like in a 12-team format, if the price is good enough, and if he's not going on long-term IL, you can really use Tyler O'Neill to your advantage, especially a righty. In that park, a little bit of a movement there with the wall in Baltimore. I've said it before, 40 bombs for Tyler O'Neill is not out of the question if he does not go on the IL, but the IL stint is very, very possible. Kerry Carpenter, we've talked a lot about him in the Discord. I feel like he comes up
every week,
the Kerry Carpenter thing, because it's really his interesting profile. When I, the other day, looked at the Tigers roster, especially with now Matt Vierling kind of starting off to a slow start, hurt, and just like the inside Bregman, like I don't like this offense. They're gonna So doesn't like a guy like Kerry Carpenter, like how do you platoon him? You're going to platoon him for like Justin Henry Molloy? I don't know. Got to play him, right?
I think they're going to give him a chance. Now, you might not want that in fantasy if he's giving you a ton of offers. And, you know, it's just, it's one of those things where as a left-handed hitter coming up through the minors, you're not going to see all that many left-on-lefty matchups. And you're not going to be seeing the Chris Sales of the world or the Scoobles of the world. So, yeah, you might have decent numbers in the minors, but I think a lot of the times when these teams are quick to platoon a left-handed hitter, I think that they usually know what they're doing, mm-hmm. being that they're a major league team. So I don't have big
expectations. You'd be surprised, actually. Have you seen the Rockies?
That's true. Yeah. So you always get a mixed bag there. But with Carpenter, maybe more volume, I don't necessarily see that as a major, huge benefit just because I don't trust him against lefties. But I guess he could throw you in another run or RBI from time to time.
Yeah, it is worth noting, like, so he's not a complete zero over his career against lefties. He was last year. Last year was really bad against them. And so the year prior in 2023, he actually had a 90 WRC plus against lefties. It was, you know, 129 against righties. And, you know, I mean, obviously not as much power and everything and a much worse hitter. But, like, you know, push comes to shove, it could be really that bad. You know, and even now I'm looking at a report here that says Tigers are open to letting Carpenter face more lefties. So you're right. It, you know, could go good or bad. I'm with you on Jorge Soler. I like the Angels a lot. I like him, especially in like underdog and OBP leagues. Mm-hmm. He's a guy that can like sneakily hit, you know, 40 bombs before or like on April 15th. And he's, you know, leading the majors in home runs, like something like that. I would not be surprised. So I do like him. Obviously comes with the batting average downside. I'm in on Tommy Edman as well. Not just as a Dodger fan, but just because he steals bags. He's in a good team context. So I like him. Don't know how I feel about Helio Ramos. Again, nothing to do with him being on the Niners. Sorry. the Giants. It's just, you know, he's one of those guys that probably deserves a, you know, to hit in the top half of the lineup. But based on the way they're constructing things, he may not. He might kind of get screwed out of that.
That's true. And with a player like him who doesn't necessarily have a loud tool, that lineup placement's even more key, I would argue. So, yeah, that's a fair call out.
And then Byron Buxton, like whatever this price is of 207, I can't get in on that. It's just a little too steep. I think we know he's going to be managed. Rocco Baldelli said so himself, I think back in December, that probably going to get 100 games or so just to kind of manage him, to kind of get the most out of him. And so we don't know when he's going to rest. So that's just a slight concern for me. Cedric Mullins, again, it's just very crowded there. I think he's a, you know, batting average drain. And I don't know, not a huge Cedric Mullins fan as far as like we're, you know, related to his draft price. And then Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is somebody that manager Tori Lavolo said that he's going to also manage him, which I guess also, this is smart. These are things that aren't good for fantasy, but it's smart for baseball. You want a guy like Gurriel Jr. who is a little fragile to make it through a full season because he is like a career 280 hitter. He does a little bit of everything. You want him in that lineup. And so that's a good way to maintain him.
Yeah, like you said, there's just a lot of just profiles that I'm completely soured on in this range, like Cedric Mullins, his power is just going down and down and down every year, and he might be a specialist one of these years, which will be very bad, or traded to a third division team. And then with Sadani Rafaela, I mean, his plate approach is so bad, I wouldn't be shocked to see him phased into more of a part-time role this season. There's a few sour guys in this range for me.
Don't the Red Sox have enough, you know, here's something that nobody thought about. Maybe, or I'm sure they have. I'm really not plugged into what a lot of everyone else is talking about, unfortunately, but I just thought of this. Can he potentially, like, if he stinks, can he just go back down to the minors? Does he have options? Like, they have a loaded infield and outfield if everyone's healthy, Boston.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, based on the age of the player, he didn't have an extremely long run in the minor leagues. So it's possible that more development time wouldn't hurt him. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. Hey, nobody thought that Torkelson would be sent back down. So that just shows you how little we know and what's going to happen this season. There's going to be so many unpredictable turns. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, in the outfield, yeah, I mean, sure that he's slated to be the center fielder now, but you've got Jaron Duran there. Yoshida's going to want it. They're going to want to get his bat in there at DH. He could even play a little bit of outfield if Trevor Story's healthy. If Willier Abreu's healthy, Rob Refsnyder against lefties. Romy Gonzalez can play against lefties in the infield and the outfield. They got David Hamilton, speedster. So I'm just putting it out there. I wouldn't be surprised at all if that something like that happened.
Absolutely.
Guys in the next range, as we're kind of getting close to wrapping things up. I don't know. You want to run through some of these names like that we have here between like 56 and 70 and see anyone you like. Just can you throw out the names?
Yeah, this is actually a range that I love, and for auctions, I really like it because you can get these players extremely cheap, and there's still some full-time hitters here that I think are going to be perfect for 15-team leagues. George Springer isn't the same guy that he used to be, but I like his volume this year. I think the addition of the steals in the back half of his career has resuscitated his value some. Brendan Donovan, I think, is a glue guy that in the middle of the season, every team's going to wish they had a Brendan Donovan to put in MI or outfield. And he's a batting average asset late, which is rare in this day and age. Nolan Jones and Lars Nootbaar, I think, are upside guys with full-time at-bats, and they've shown skills that are very loud and less loud, but full-time at-bats as far as J.J. Bleday. If the Athletics do have an offensive-heavy park, he's going to be a beneficiary of it, and you don't have to pay that much to find out. So I like him, and I think he's a nice player too.
Yeah, I like most of the guys that you mentioned as well. Brendan Donovan gives you second base, outfield. He's one of the elite guys in the league at making contact. Mm-hmm. They call him Donnie Dingers, but he doesn't really hit a lot of dingers. But he does everything else well. He's one of the few guys that he helps you in that very scarce batting average category where he can hit, 275 or higher, can hit 290, 300. It's always possible. He'll hit in the middle of that lineup as well. Does have a little bit of injury history. And listen, he's slated to play the outfield. If for whatever reason the Cardinals end up trading Nolan Arenado in the next couple of weeks, then most likely that would then move Brendan Donovan to play second base, Donovan and Nolan Gorman can pretty much like manage second and third there if Arenado's traded. I am not as bullish on Alec Burleson, though I think he's a good contact hitter, showed a little bit of power last year, but kind of short side platoon guy. I don't know if they're going to give him full-time at-bats this year. Garrett Mitchell, strong side platoon guy. I mean, dude, just stay healthy, Garrett Mitchell, because I think he's one of the guys that can be like an absolute breakout, like a 25-25 guy. I mean, I'm not even exaggerating. Like, they need a guy like that. I mean, you're Milwaukee guy, right? What do you think about Garrett Mitchell?
I agree with you as far as that skill set. And the good thing is you don't have to pay a huge amount to find out. He's not one of those helium guys in the 150s like Jason Dominguez, who hasn't had a sustained run in the majors, even though he's drafted that high. So I like that call out there with Mitchell. And again, he has that glove that's going to cement him in the lineup. He may be shielded against lefties, but that's okay. You can make moves Monday through Thursday and Friday through Sunday if he has two lefties facing. So he's a great target in this range for sure.
Matt Wallner's another interesting guy. Somebody I featured in my original article in the preseason. In the draft guide back in December, late round profitable hitters. Actually, Matt Wallner and Lars Nootbaar were both in there. Nootbaar is kind of the total package in a lot of ways. Like if he was ever on a different team and could just stay healthy, like this is a guy that could return top 50, top 80 overall value, but just it's the staying healthy. It's the fact that, who the heck knows where, the direction of this Cardinals team, but I really would like to see things go well for him. And then Matt Wallner, I saw him getting some leadoff work. Didn't go well, of course. And it was like a whole bunch of strikeouts, but that's what he does. He's a dude that can hit 30 homers and then, strike out 200 times, and lead the league in strikeouts. I don't think that's anything that he's ever going to improve on in his game. But listen, if you need power late in the draft, I think Matt Wallner is an option. I don't know if he's going to get much, if any, leadoff work, but he's there in the mix. And then Jesus Sanchez, a little bit of some injury concern a couple of weeks ago, but he seems like he's okay. Kind of stuck on a bad Marlins team, but he really did break out last year. The stolen bases maybe are not sustainable, but Jesus Sanchez, man, if he gets traded at the to the trade deadline somewhere onto a good contender, he can be a real, you know, huge boon for the last part of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. His power is mammoth whenever he gets a hold of one. So I like that call out there. And this is a really good range, I think, if you're filling up your outfield four, outfield five. Heck, you may want to get one of these guys, put him in your utility spot, because it gets pretty ugly after this. So I think this is kind of your last chance saloon for not only everyday at-bats for a lot of these players, but excitement. Mm-hmm. And in the next range, I think there's a big cliff here. That's at least how I have it in my personal tiers.
It's a huge, you're absolutely right. It's a huge drop off. And anyone that's been drafting a lot this preseason recognizes that outfield is shallow. You do need to carry five of them. It gets really tough after that. So if you started your draft off, I mean, there are a lot of outfielders in the first round, but if you started your draft off with a, you know, like a Bobby Witt Jr. and then you got like, you know, a pitcher, or you got Ellie, or you just got guys where you don't have outfielders, and then you're picking your first one in like the Doyle, Brenton Doyle, like, you know, Suzuki range. And then all of a sudden, when you're getting to this point in the draft, you almost have to go heavy. So
yeah,
grab two of these guys, JJ Bleday, Michael Conforto, we hadn't even mentioned, Donovan, Springer, Garrett Mitchell, you know, Jung Hoo Lee, that I'm saving for, you know, we're not talking about him today. If you know, it's a huge, huge drop off, because then you're getting into like full on platoon guys that may not make the team. So I'm with you. Grab two of these guys.
And I think in an auction league too, if you can grab three of these guys for the $3 to $5 range, you know, in live events that may go up because you're going to be playing against such sharp competition, but in the online auctions, at least, I would so much rather just have that $3 to $5 budget range for a couple of these guys rather than floating around in the $1-$2 range for outfield, because with more and more platoons, that line is going up for that cliff. So this is, I think, your last chance saloon.
And then one more guy I want to ask you before we talk about some of the post 300 ADP, just like kind of like our guys or who we're interested in or who we recommend people to draft. Let me ask you this, very pivotal, I believe, Roman Anthony. I know RotoWire's James Anderson is a longtime friend. He's a person in the dynasty world who I very much respect, because he is very realistic with expectations on prospects, and he doesn't just love every single one of them. And I think I remember having a conversation with him a couple months back about Roman Anthony. It's before like things really get started, but I wonder, is Roman Anthony going to play a lot this year? Is he going to force his way onto the team? Because in my opinion, he is, he's too good for the minor leagues. I think he's better than a lot of his own teammates, but how does that work, you know, with the, you know, the minor league rules, the finances, like, you know, all those other things that I'm, you know, not totally in the know of.
That's a great question. And I think that's absolutely accurate. He is ready for the majors, I believe. This guy isn't even 21 years old yet. He doesn't turn 21 until mid-May. But he showed mastery to me over the higher levels of the minors in AA and AAA. The depth chart is the only sticking point. And it is a fair point. They're stuffed on this team. They're absolutely loaded. But as we know, injuries always happen. I remember last year, a lot of people were worried about certain Reds hitters. They wouldn't have playing time. These things always do sort themselves out. That being said, do you want to go ahead and stash this guy in a highly competitive NFBC league? That's personal preference. I think he has the talent to justify it, but it's a personal choice. So I'm with you there, but it's a tricky challenge to have to navigate.
Yeah, because if it doesn't come till May or June and you have him as a stash, and then say someone else gets injured on your team, all of a sudden you've got two, like if you want him as a stash, you got to have to go out of your way for it. And like, you can't have also Christian Campbell. You can't have other, you know, Bubba Chandler. If he's your stash, he's your stash, and you just got to go with it. I think it'll pay off, but you have to be patient. You do not want to get to a point where it's, you know, the middle of April, you feel like you're struggling for power, and like, you know, I don't know, Gerard Encarnacion is crushing it. And you know, he's going to be a popular ad. And then, you know, you drop Roman Anthony for Gerard Encarnacion, and then Encarnacion goes back into a platoon, and then everyone drops him. And then, oh, well, you just give up Roman Anthony to somebody else on the team. So these are, you know, these are tough decisions. Let's wrap things up here with the end gamers, and not going to name all the players, but just wanted to ask you, like, you know, post 380p guys being drafted in 12 team OCs, like, who are you comfortable sharing as far as like targets or people that you recommend that folks should be drafting?
Yeah. So as far as your online championship, you're going to have a lot of churn. You're going to have a lot of malleability with who you pick up and who you roster, but I think Brandon Marsh is one of those players that could stick on your team. Obviously, you're going to have to bench him against the lefties, but he provides power. He provides speed. In some ways, he's a poor man's Josh Lowe, so I like that from him. Trevor Larnach is another one where he's got a lot of power in his bat, and you're going to know when to use him. If there's multiple lefties on the schedule, he's unusable, but he's a great power addition late. And then Johnny DeLuca is another one where, in Dan Thompson's stolen base article, DeLuca is one that stuck out to me as a guy that could be a sneaky steals guy. He's going to have full-time burn as the center fielder for the Rays, and that's a nice park upgrade too, so you're getting a lot of things in that package. Mm. If he doesn't turn out, he's an easy drop in 12 teams, but I like him in all formats.
Yeah, I like Johnny DeLuca to step things up on the speed side. I think Heston Kjerstad is another one, I think more for like 15-teamers, like if you're thinking that he just kind of finds a way to make the team. I think he's an interesting one. I agree with you with Trevor Larnach. He's a perfect, I think, draft champions guy that you just, you know, he's going to hit middle of the lineup, hit for a little power when the Twins are facing a bunch of righties, and you can, you know, work that in NFBC. I think people know where I stand on Victor Scott the second. If you don't, check out tweets or check out articles, ftnfantasy.com. Aston Hayes in Cincinnati, kind of sneaky, you know, a little interesting, but he's kind of like more of a 15 team guy. And then other than that, really it's like Max Kepler. Like I'm just, you know, I'm back in on Max. I think Max Kepler is a full-time guy. I will also note that Brandon Marsh, I guess has been really working on a lot of stuff to try to hit lefties better. Just making some adjustments. And I think maybe Brandon Marsh is one of those like under the radar, nobody really loves him. But I think he might be kind of a sneaky next level and just has another like even better season than he did last year.
Yeah, I completely agree. And with Marsh on a per plate appearance basis, 16 and 19 last year, he's 27 years old, was traded for Logan Ohapi. He's a guy that has potential, like you said. So I love that call out that you circled back to him.
And then I see people drafting Chandler Simpson in the NFBC OC, in a 12 team OC. I guess you just don't have any speed, and you're just putting all the eggs in the Chandler Simpson basket. And for those that don't know, Chandler Simpson stole what, 100 bases or something like that in the Rays minor league system last year. Are people drafting him just in case he makes the team? Does he have a good shot to make the team? I haven't been tracking that.
For me, I don't think he has a chance to make the team. Defensively is where he's going to have to be able to improve. He has absolutely no power. The one home run that he hit last year was an inside the Parker, so it doesn't even count. But yeah, like mm-hmm. you said, he has those steals. And the crazy thing about him is he has a really good hit tool too. So if you combine speed with the hit tool with good, with even solid defense, I think he could be a full-time regular. But if his defense lags behind, the Rays have no tolerance for that, because he'd be a DH, hide him in the outfield guy with no power. So if he can develop that glove, that'll be key, but I don't see him cracking this opening day roster for sure.
Yeah. 50 round draft and hold guy. Everyone, you will have the opportunity if you want on Thursday. This is the Thursday, the 6th of March. There is a Beat Lucas Beery FTN League, NFBC. It's an NFBC 12 team OC. Could take notes on everything he talked about, players he likes and doesn't like, and you can snipe them. Lucas and I will be streaming this draft live. It'll be at 5 p.m. Eastern?
Yes, 5 Eastern.
5 Eastern. And there, last I looked, there are spots available. League just opened, so we got a couple people in to start, and several spots. Maybe by the time you listen, it's closed, but get in there at NFBC, join the Lucas Beery League, and we will go to battle. Any last thoughts or things or anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I really think that when you're filling that outfield, you don't want to wait too long. I think we hammered that point pretty good, but I think it's really key. There will be pop-ups in the outfield, and I've heard a lot of people over the years say you can wait on your outfield. You don't want to fill it too early, and that is true, but I think times have changed with the platoons, and I'm not afraid to fill it early. Even before pick 250, I could have all five filled up, maybe even have a guy in the utility spot, so I'm trying to avoid some of those duds that happen after the cliff.
Yeah, outfielders are it's shallow this year, and there is, there's a lot of value in that 200 to 300 overall range. You're going to see some guys that really, really bounce up there. Lucas, dude, it's always a pleasure to work with you. You're like a consummate professional. I'm ecstatic that we have you on the team, and we will be back. Lucas Beery, the Beat Lucas Beery League FTN Fantasy YouTube channel, and we'll be back then. For Lucas Beery, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you soon.